Thank you, Nick, so much. Good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Richards. My partner and I, Brian Devine, are here from Blank Rome. So let us launch into the U.S. bankruptcy discussion because it is, as Nick said, a hot topic. Bankruptcy is not a subject that ordinarily would be discussed with this audience. It was, in fact, a verboten topic. But these are unique times. And what's different? You now have larger companies, more public companies, and more of them now in trouble. Greater number of players, more complex financing. As the lending panel discussed earlier, you have a reduction of the debt capital markets, significant overcapacities with values having plummeted. The floor on the charter rates have fallen dramatically. The predominance of the syndicated versus the bilateral loans are also extant. And along with the complexity of the syndicated transactions. And many banks, as you heard earlier, formerly active on the front end, are not now active. And their mandate is, in fact, to clean up the existing mess. So the days of amend, extend, and pretend are long gone. But like politics, as long as the market trends are uncertain and generally negative, the tendency is always to kick the can down the road. The critical issues in American bankruptcy is that it is a restructuring with a unique set of attributes. Jurisdiction in the United States Bankruptcy Court, it is one of the few courts in the world that is effective in dealing with international assets. A company filing for Chapter 11 automatically obtains an injunction, or it's called the stay, from all lawsuits and creditor collection efforts pending around the world. This is a very, very powerful shield. Oh, good. Thank you. Shows you what. Now we can see if I can speak and change the slides at the same time. Unlike other, and the bankruptcy court is very, very aggressive in enforcing the automatic stay. Unlike other countries, a Chapter 11 debtor is presumed and generally allowed to keep control of its assets and continue operations globally in the ordinary course and with existing management. Getting ahead. Okay. The secured lenders or the mortgagees are protected in a Chapter 11 case, and they have significant weapons. Liens and mortgages must be retained, and collateral must be protected. The concept in the bankruptcy code is called adequate protection and may include cash payments, payment of expenses, additional or replacement liens, or other relief. It is not defined and is dealt with in a case-by-case basis. Also, the lenders are free to move for relief from the automatic stay if in fact there is a lack of adequate protection and no equity in the collateral and no reasonable prospect of reorganization. The lenders also have a right to credit bid and the sale of the property either by an individual asset or by motion or through a plan of reorganization. Remember, and this is the how, Chapter 11 is not for all companies. If the business, I think as one of the lenders from DVB mentioned this morning, is not viable or sustainable, Chapter 11 will likely not be the answer. One of our colleagues from Holman Fennec published something outside, says liberation or suspended sentence. That's an excellent way of describing it. Diligence is required to identify the business and financial problems and to determine eligibility and how and whether the bankruptcy tool fits the restructuring strategy. Then preparation for filing begins with a company's eligibility to file in the United States and invoke the bankruptcy court's jurisdiction. A successful Chapter 11 is the result of careful corporate, legal, financial planning, and often, and most especially, pre-negotiation with important stakeholders. If rushed, a Chapter 11 becomes more difficult to sustain without the adequate planning. In international cases, the key first step is to access the American bankruptcy, and that is to determine eligibility to be a Chapter 11 debtor. Many international shipping companies have property or assets located in the United States or connections where U.S. bankruptcy protection can be sought. General Maritime being one of the more recent, and it was published in one of the legal papers this morning that General Maritime, which filed a plan of reorganization when they filed their Chapter 11 in mid-November, with a frenzy of last-minute negotiations, just negotiated with their bondholders. Their disclosure statement, which is akin to a proxy statement, was approved yesterday, and they will go about their solicitation process. But they're hardly the only ones. Omega Transportation, Marco Polo, Trailer Bridge, to mention but a few. Now, you get to the eligibility and the jurisdictional issues, and the eligibility provisions under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code are residence, domicile, place of business, or property. So therefore, a foreign corporation can qualify as status as a Chapter 11 debtor. All these provisions are written in the disjunctive. They do not have to be cumulative. And there is a low threshold, therefore, but it needs to be something not insubstantial. Other considerations, like the flag states of the cases, are largely irrelevant in situations like this. And the applicability of foreign law and loan documents are not controlling for purposes of jurisdiction. Now, with respect to the payment of foreign or trade vendors with no business nexus in the United States, often those will be addressed in the first day pleadings, especially with respect to foreign vendors. Dealing with property in the United States, and I think it's particularly the case that's gotten a lot of notoriety within the last 4 months, is Marco Polo Sea Trade. And what is fascinating there is here you have an Amsterdam-based company of 6 vessels flying the Liberian flag, and property, the bankruptcy court found property in the United States to be limited to 2 factors. One, was the retainer paid to counsel, and 2, most importantly, was the debtor's ownership interest in the OSG pool. Now, why do you consider Chapter 11? The benefits. And as I noted before, Chapter 11 is not for the faint of heart, but by the same token, hope is not a viable business alternative. When you consider Chapter 11, it's a function of taking control. You either use it or lose it. Now, creating optionality is one of the best things about Chapter 11, and this highlights the importance of the planning to eliminate what we would call a free fall into bankruptcy, which was something that happened to Marco Polo Sea Trade, and as compared to a pre-negotiated plan, as you had in General Maritime, TBS, and cases of that nature. Again, in Chapter 11, you have the significant worldwide debtor protections and benefits obtained under the Bankruptcy Code. For bankruptcy sales, and this is where you bring in private equity or just an acquisition-oriented owner, asset purchasers receive the benefit of a cleansing order from the 363 sale, which is subject to higher and better bids, and you can sell the assets free and clear of claims, liens, and encumbrances on notice, and it's highly beneficial to purchasers. Similarly, a plan can bind dissenting classes of creditors in equity to fair and equitable treatment and is no longer bound by the pre-filing handcuffs in most corporate documents. For approval by a class, you need greater than 2/3 in dollar amount and more than half in number. Also, bank group collateral agents have greater flexibility in a situation like this than they normally would. You can also access new financing with super priority claims. That was briefly addressed in the earlier panel. And super priority claims and liens, because many lenders are presently unwilling to loan new monies or advance new monies absent the protections of a super priority protection under the debtor in possession financing. The lenders often link performance milestones with the filing of the plan or asset sales in a compacted time frame. You can also have the benefit of reducing transaction costs associated with the restructuring by enabling the issuance of reorganization securities without the requirements of a registration with the Securities and Exchange Commission. This is called an 1145 exemption and is very advantageous to a company coming out of chapter. One of the other issues that is very critical is a provision in most every contract that provides for the termination of the agreement, whether it be a bunker contract, charter party, shipbuilding contract, upon the filing of a bankruptcy or a like insolvency. These provisions are unenforceable as a matter of law. And you cannot believe the amount of litigation over this, but they are simply unenforceable. Another provision is the assignability of executory contracts or leases. Even those which contain anti-assignment provisions are similarly unenforceable. The test for assignment is really adequate assurance of future performance by the proposed assignee. So a debtor may reject or terminate an unprofitable contract and use the rejection powers to cap and fix the damages of an unsecured claim. This is a powerful, powerful tool for the debtor to rid itself of uneconomic and burdensome arrangements. There are also, seeing if I'm moving along, there are issues about to recharacterization, substantive consolidation, subordination of claims, and the binding of the creditors through a plan of reorganization, all of which are separate topics but are underneath the same rubric. If a restructuring, and we cannot emphasize this too strongly, is partially negotiated or if better prepackaged, then the Chapter 11 can move with greater speed. The timelines can be compacted, and agreement with key stakeholders, particularly the senior lenders, are often critical. The rehabilitation can be achieved in a highly accelerated time frame. General Maritime will emerge from Chapter 11 likely by the end of March or the beginning of April. It'll mean a five and a half month stint, and where they will delever the balance sheet because they filed their plan with the lenders on board, with new equity lined up. They did it the right way. TBS is also doing it that way. A cautionary note, why not? One of the gentlemen earlier stated, I think it was from DVB, that transaction costs can be significant. That is absolutely correct. Even a well-planned and organized Chapter 11 accelerates transaction costs in every business, litigation, corporate, or financial challenge facing a debtor, meaning high concentration of fees, especially on the front end. The estate of the debtor, the company, pays for the professional fees of the creditors committee and often other stakeholders. The key here is planning, an essential element. Also, trade leverage. Trade creditors may be, especially foreign ones, may be insulated from enforcement by virtue of the fact they have little or no nexus with the United States. The careful planning is key to controlling the challenges and these challenges in what's called first day motions, approving necessity payments for foreign vendors, which ensures that a debtor makes a soft landing in Chapter 11 with the support of the trade, the bunker suppliers, the employees, et cetera. It is mandatory for a debtor to keep the trade happy. As I noted earlier, the company usually operates in the ordinary course through the Chapter 11 to continue global operations under existing management. Also important to note, because a lot of people, whether it be lenders or the company itself, do not appreciate the fact that even in Chapter 11, you do have the opportunity to wind down and liquidate very effectively and very efficiently in a Chapter 11. The benefit of having one court overview the entire liquidation and wind down proceedings versus having sales in multiple venues. Also, there is no, to dispel misinformation, there is no requirement for a Chapter 7 trustee to undertake the liquidation. Business decisions, just remember, that are outside of the ordinary course of business in a Chapter 11 are now subject, once you're in Chapter 11, to bankruptcy court approval. The good news is that the approval by the bankruptcy court ratifies the business judgment of the company with respect to financing, transactions, sales, etc. The bad news is that the bankruptcy judge has input, along with the creditors committee and major stakeholders, about the strategy that the company is undertaking. Also, transactions between the debtors and insiders are subject to a higher level of scrutiny. And as I mentioned before, senior secured creditors, mortgagees, lenders, etc., retain substantial leverage. Often, in exchange for near-term liquidity, you will find that senior lenders, DIP funders, debtor-in-possession funders, force market tests of the assets. They drive the bankruptcy timeline in a way that are very advantageous to their own agendas. And also, the financial and the business history of the company will be subjected to substantial disclosure requirements, both historical and prospective. The key here is, if you're filing for Chapter 11, have a clear view of what the goals are and with a clear plan that the bankruptcy judge can embrace. Because most bankruptcy courts, whatever the circumstances, will likely give a debtor some leeway time to accomplish a reorganization. An underlying premise of bankruptcy in Chapter 11 reorganization is transparency. Creditors' committees will often seek to act as a shadow board of directors. And as I wind up, those of you who've seen the movie, Tom Cruise's movie, and Jerry Maguire, Show Me the Money. That, absolutely. And when you enter Chapter 11, you have to have an exit strategy and identify the transactional risks. President Dwight Eisenhower always said that plans never work, but without one, you never get anywhere. So true. Liquidity issues are always key drivers in the restructuring, the bankruptcy, adequate protection, sale and use of property, credit, etc. You have to stress test the bankruptcy option against non-bankruptcy alternatives, but one thing to remember, never, never, never wait until the liquidity situation is dire and you're desperate, because then it is a bad situation. In closing, I'd just like to give you an example, a Petro Rig case, which was two Singapore entities with their affiliates filed in the Southern bankruptcy in the Southern District of New York. The only assets were an oil rig in Singapore under construction and a disputed contractual right to a riser in Louisiana. The debtor obtained a temporary restraining order, an injunction, to prevent the Singapore shipyard from exercising its rights to sell the oil rig. The unearned retainer by the law firm was deemed sufficient to qualify as a jurisdictional basis. Now, the bankruptcy court never ruled on the issue because the parties disposed of eligibility on consent, but the debtors sold the rigs for in excess of $400 million each and paid the bondholders 120%. It's a point is that there is a silver lining in bankruptcy. I think I've got to my 20 minutes, and I will gladly take any questions that anybody wants to throw. Okay. Otherwise, thank you very much.